And our next case is the Halu Indishaw versus the Commonwealth of Virginia. And Mr. Solman, again, good morning, sir.
Good morning.
And would you like to reserve some time?
5 minutes would be great.
5 minutes, yes, sir. Okay. All right, come on up, and then we're happy to hear from you.
May it please the court. In the Spencer case, the standard was established in Virginia for admission of evidence of apparently a scientific type of nature. And the court stated, of course, that we declined to adopt the Frye test in Virginia. Where scientific evidence is offered, the court must make a threshold finding of fact with respect to the reliability of the scientific evidence. And they go on to state that that applies to not only the guilt phase of a trial, but to judicial proceedings generally. Now, somewhere along the line, and I don't think Virginia invented this, but somebody came up with the idea that if you could stand on one leg for 30 seconds and twitch nary a muscle, at least not twice, You were as sober as a, what's the expression, as a judge. But if you did twitch a muscle twice, your sacred liberty could be taken from you and you could be hauled off to the Hoosgow, where you probably weren't going to get bond for at least a half a day. I don't know how anybody came up with that. I don't know if anybody's established a correlation between these so-called field sobriety tests and intoxication. And it seems to me that before you put it...
Wait, back up. There have been indications throughout our jurisprudence where a determination has been made scientifically that a certain test does not indicate whether or not a person is intoxicated, including the horizontal gaze and stagnus. That's not been... It hasn't survived time. And so is that a bit of an overstatement on your part?
I agree the horizontal gaze nystagmus test doesn't establish it.
But you say there have been no times where things that are done in the context of evaluating a DUI that these tests have gone under any real scrutiny.
Well, in my little experience with the horizontal gaze nystagmus, about 75% of the time it's not admitted and about 25% of the time it is. I don't know if these tests are scientific. I don't know if they're reliable. I don't know... And I don't think any courts know, because there's never any evidence that's put in that says this relates to that. It's simply been accepted for years and years, but nobody knows why, and nobody can understand, and there's been really no correlation established. And it seems to me that if you're going to put in a test at any stage of the judicial proceeding, that you at least ought to be able to have somebody come in and say, because of this, that.
Well, what if they're not scientific? What if they are merely observational?
Then
does that
worse.
Make a difference? It's worse?
It's worse.
Are you saying that the test should not be admitted then?
Well, there used to be a commercial on TV that says, I'm not a lawyer, but I play one on TV. You remember that?
Mm-hmm.
And these tests are like, we're not scientific tests, but we play ones in courtrooms.
So you're saying they should not even be admitted. That testimony regarding what the officer asked somebody to do and his performance on those tests should not even be before the jury.
That's right. I'm not even saying that. What I'm saying is, if you're going to put it before the jury, put somebody in there to say there's a correlation.
Well, could you have an officer say to could you have an officer drop a quarter and say to the defendant, can you pick that up? And he goes to pick it up and he falls over. Is that particular observation admissible before the jury?
Now you're asking me, this is a design field sobriety test.
I'm taking away the word test, and I'm saying, could it be included, I guess, is what I'm saying, in the observations that the officer had of the person.
Okay, so now we have the field sobriety euphemisms, whatever they are. And I don't know what the proper procedure would be. But it seems to me that if a Commonwealth is going to rely on something and they're going to use it as a basis to deprive somebody of their liberty, there has to be a correlation between this and that. And just saying, you know, can you stand on one foot or you can walk a straight line and do heel to toe, and if you, God forbid, you miss your heel to toe by a quarter of an inch, you're in trouble. I don't know how that relates to anything.
Doesn't it relate to levels of getting you to the point where the Commonwealth does have the ability to actually engage in an arrest of an individual? For instance, taking Judge O'Brien's hypothetical, if a person reaches over to pick up the quarter that's not really there,
yes,
couldn't a reasonable police officer come to the conclusion that either the person is sick or under the influence of something?
I don't know what the conclusion could be. I agree there could be a multiple series of conclusions. I just say before you make the conclusion and you say this conclusion means that this person is under the influence.
No, I think what the law does is
that.
What this conclusion sets the stage for further investigation, which would then support whether or not a person should be placed under arrest for DUI.
I assume there's many things you could do to investigate. But when you have these so-called standardized field sobriety tests and no one's established any relationship, I mean, you know, we all have different abilities. In high school, I wasn't a great athlete, but I could hold my own. But I could do one thing. I could do this frog stand thing where you put your elbows out, you're on your knees, and I had the school record for that. You know, I can't do it now because, you know, my balance has changed. All I'm saying is before you put in evidence like that, you should at least have somebody say that there's some meaning to it. Otherwise, we're just doing the basic dunking stool.
I think the continuum is that one thing leads to another. A police officer, thankfully, cannot just go up to a person and arrest them because they look like a person who might be under the influence. There has to be something, and we've defined that as in the law, as to give the police officer the ability to make that inquiry. And the way that the police officers make that inquiry, based upon my experience, is conduct a series of tests. You might have an excuse for one. I can't stand on my right leg because I had surgery. Well, then can you stand on your left leg? I don't have a meniscus in my left leg. Okay, so we're going to move to something else. In other words, doing things which will allow the person, if they have a good faith reason for not being able to perform one of these myriad of tests that are out there, to give the officer the ability to make the determination as to whether we should take the next step, and that is do a PBT and all of that, to basically develop amongst that continuum as to whether or not there's probable cause to arrest.
No, I understand all that. All I'm saying is when you use these standardized tests, there ought to be somebody to say that they're meaningful. And not just, okay, I gave the test and they didn't perform to my satisfaction, which I think is the phrase they always use. I'm not saying they shouldn't do tests. I'm not saying they shouldn't do anything. I'm just saying that what they do at least should be justified, and there should be some correlation between what they do and what the result is. Moving, to the other issue, which had to do with the bringing in of the dog. And what happened there
Before
is...
Before you get too much in detail on that, could you address the lack of a trial transcript issue?
Yes. I didn't, you know, I was trying to save money for my client, actually, but I don't think it's required, and I would direct the court to the Smith case. And in the Smith case, they found that he failed to timely file a transcript, which was indispensable, which was the motion to suppress transcript. And they go on to state that the content and application of Rule 5A8 demonstrates that there is no requirement that a transcript be filed in every appeal. The plain language of the rule does not require the filing of a transcript in order to proceed with the appeal. With an appeal, not only does the rule allow the filing of a statement of facts in place of a transcript, cases may often be decided without the filing.
But when it comes to all reviewing the motion to suppress, we're supposed to consider not only the evidence presented at the motion to suppress, but also what was presented during the course of the trial.
Well, that was said in Green, and in the Green case, there were two issues. And the two issues were, one, the motion to suppress, and two, the sufficiency of the evidence. And obviously, they didn't say they said you may consider what happened at the trial. But in this case, we have a significant advantage, and that is back then they didn't have the videos, and I think the video is in evidence before you so that you can actually see what happened, and then there's nothing that not on the video that anybody's contesting, and obviously the judge made its ruling based on what was on the video. In fact, the judge found that the officer's testimony about the driving was all wrong, and specifically said there was no problem with the driving whatsoever.
And here, reasonable suspicion isn't an issue, correct? At this point, reasonable suspicion for the stop isn't an issue because that assignment was denied.
Right. The issue is, I'm taking up some of my time, but the issue on the stop is he ordered the dog. And when he ordered the dog, he said he testified that he was going to order the dog before he even pulled him over. And then he said that after he ordered the dog and he went back to the car, it's the first time that he smelled alcohol.
Where in the transcript do we find that? And the reason I ask while you're looking is because on page 29, when you've got the officer's testimony, you have him answering, "So when I stopped him, I approached on the passenger side. While I was speaking with him, I observed that he had bloodshot, watery eyes, and slurred speech. I asked him how much he had to drink and drank, and he told me that he had consumed two drinks."
Right.
Which sounds like the initial part of the stop, not after.
That's right. That's right. But then later on, he testifies that the first time he smells alcohol is when he comes back to the car. And if I can answer that when I'm on my return, I'll find a little bit.
Sure. You want to save the rest of your time for rebuttal then?
Please.
And answer Judge Atley's question? Sure. And Mr. Campbell.
Hi, good afternoon. May it please the Court, Aaron Campbell on behalf of the Commonwealth. We would ask that the Court dismiss this case for failure to file a necessary transcript, or just affirm on the record that we have before.
And I appreciate you setting out the issues as you see them, counsel.
Yes.
What do you believe, for purposes of the inquiry that Judge Atley made, is indispensable that we would be able to discern through actually having a transcript in this case?
Sure. We don't have the trial transcript. There could have been any number of evidence that could have occurred at the trial that would be different than the suppression hearing. The defendant could have testified. He didn't testify at the suppression hearing. We just don't know. We just don't know what happened. But also, the main reason is that we need the trial transcripts to determine whether or not the defendant renewed his motion to suppress or objections to the pretrial rulings. And without the trial transcript, we don't have any clue on whether he did that. And that is the Allen case from this court and also the 2017 White case from the Supreme Court of Virginia.
I don't know the answer to this question, so I'm going to ask you. Could a counsel on appeal state that as an officer of the court, I can tell you, even without the transcript, that I did indeed renew that objection?
I would say no. I think you would need an actual record to decide that under the Rule 5A8. And then that is the appellant's responsibility that the necessary transcript be prepared and filed with this court, and it was not in this case.
Otherwise, it's going outside the record.
It is. And the bottom line is that we are asking for a new trial without knowing what actually happened at the trial. And I believe we need the trial transcript in this case. And also, for all the, I'll also point out that it wasn't just the Green case that said that we look at both the suppression hearing and the trial transcripts. It's a number of cases from this court and the Supreme Court of Virginia, including the 2017 White case, which, of course, we've, in 2017, we had videotape of stops. So it is very clear that we look at both the trial and the suppression hearing. On the record we have before us, my understanding is the defendant is arguing that the detention for the DUI was unlawful. The trial court made like three main rulings during the suppression hearing. One, that there was reasonable suspicion for the stop, which is not an issue. Two, that there was probable cause for the DUI. And three was this issue about the dog, whether it was relevant. There really wasn't any argument brought forth that the officer did not have reasonable suspicion to detain the defendant for a suspected DUI. Nonetheless, even if that argument was preserved, we would argue that there was plenty of reasonable suspicion to detain the defendant for a possible DUI. It is on Judge Alley on page 29 in the appendix. It was the initial encounter with the defendant that the officer saw bloodshot, watery eyes, and slurred speech, and had spoken to the driver, and the driver had said that he had consumed alcohol.
And I assume it's the Commonwealth's position that then that's enough for beyond just the traffic infraction for which there's initial stop, but then there's reasonable, articulable suspicion to investigate the DUI.
Yes, at that point there was reasonable suspicion to investigate the DUI. He did go back to run the information. He calls the drug dog. He comes back. He did, when the defendant stepped out of the vehicle, he did smell alcohol on him. But even
at that point, he smelled it from his person as opposed to the odor within the vehicle.
Yeah, so he's. His reasonable suspicion got stronger and closer to probable cause as the stop went on. As for the drug dog, this is not a Rodriguez situation. Rodriguez is a situation where you prolong the stop and investigate unrelated matters without reasonable suspicion. In this case, the officer had reasonable suspicion to investigate a DUI. And this is not Rodriguez. There was no prolonging of the stop to do the drug dog. The drug dog is my understanding from the record that the drug dog did not alert to the car, and B, did not take longer than it took to do the sobriety test.
And no drugs were found anyway, were they?
No. And Rodriguez, if there was a Rodriguez problem, then you would suppress any drugs that were found. You wouldn't suppress the DUI evidence, which is independent of that.
So in essence, what you're saying is the DUI survives even if we were to conclude that there was a Rodriguez violation?
Yes.
Okay.
As for a field sobriety test, I think it's important to remember that what we're talking about is probable cause based on an objective officer's perspective in this case. The officer was not giving an opinion or like a scientific opinion. He was just stating his observations. He didn't even give a conclusion. He just testified to, these are the field sobriety tests I performed. These are how he performed on them. There are no Virginia cases on the admission of field sobriety test, but as I cited in my brief, there are lots of other jurisdictions who have addressed this issue. I will point out there is some disagreement with the HGN evidence and whether that's admissible, mainly in a case in chief or like a sign, an opinion type of situation. I don't know of any that really deal with this sort of probable cause determination. But nonetheless, that's not an issue in this case because we don't even know what the results of that particular test were. As for the other field sobriety test, sometimes they're called psychomotor field sobriety tests. The courts are pretty in uniform that these are not scientific. These are just merely observational, and that they are within the common knowledge and experience of layperson and jurist to be able to determine if someone is not walking in a straight line or standing on one foot or saying their ABCs or counting, then they can, a reasonable common person can understand that alcohol may have been affecting their ability
and
to
the
do
problem
that.
And the problem with the nature of objecting to those observational tests is that people don't understand that they can pretty much opt out of anyone if they've got some situation that prevents them from being able to do whatever test the police officer wants to do. Say your ABC is backwards. I can't. I'm dyslexic. Stand on one leg. I had surgery on my right leg. And there are things to do that can enable a person who is confronted with the possibility of arrest to basically do those things that he or she is capable of doing based upon their circumstances if they are not under the influence.
Yes, Your Honor. That's true, and we did not have any opt-out in this case at all. I would just finally put a point that Spencer talked about scientific tests being so familiar and accepted, such as fingerprint tests, that we do not need any sort of expertise to lay a foundation. I would argue that these field sobriety tests are like the fingerprint test. These get used constantly throughout the Commonwealth for years now, and we submit that there was no abuse of discretion in the trial court in hearing the officer's testimony regarding the field sobriety test. Unless the court has any questions, I would again ask that the court dismiss this case for failure to file a necessary transcript and or affirmed on the record that was submitted.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
May it please the court.
Took a little longer than I expected, but...
thank you for your effort.
On page 29 of the transcript, the officer says the following thing. The question was, did you ask him where he had his drinks?
I had a feeling in taking a little bit of a look during some of Mr. Campbell's arguments, that's where you were headed. I did once I had him step out of the car, so that's after he returned to the vehicle.
That's right. Let me talk about the dog briefly and then the transcript. The problem I was trying to raise, and I was cut off in pages 61 through 63, is I want to show that the officer, once he called... determined to call the dog, and he did call the dog, he had to find an excuse to keep my client there. And our contention was, and I was trying to explore, that he went into the DUI investigation based on the fact that he wanted to search the vehicle, which he clearly wanted to do because he called the dog. The dog didn't show anything. He searched the vehicle anyway. It wasn't an inventory search because the passenger drove the vehicle away. So he was hidebound and determined to search the vehicle. And I was trying to explore that, and Judge Fiore raised a similar objection to what you folks have raised, and that is, well, they didn't find anything. And cut me off right there and then said, I want to do this because I want to make a record. He says, well, I'll give you a sentence afterwards, I think on page 81 or 82. I got my sentence in that I wanted to explore the whole idea whether this was just some justification to stall for time, because if he'd written it for the light that was out, he would have gone back to his vehicle, written the summons, came back to the vehicle, handed the summons, and that would have been the end of the day. But once he had called the dog, he had to have an excuse to keep my client there. So that I have that on the and that was what I was trying to get into in the dog issue, and I think the court should send it back for me to get into it. The second thing on the transcript, it's really a two-way street. And what happened here is that we got the curiam opinion on April 3rd, and pursuant to the rules, I contacted the Attorney General's office, and I said, what do you want in the joint appendix? And I was told, forget that. You can just file your own separate appendix. I said, okay, fine. And I filed my own separate appendix. And then I got I was called and told, well, we need the trial transcript. And I said, fine. I'll pay for it out of my own pocket because it's my appeal, and we'll get the trial transcript. And I'm told, no, I don't want to do it. I said, we have to get some extensions of time to satisfy your request for the trial transcript. And I was told, no, we don't want to do that. So, if one side wants the trial transcript and the other side's willing to pay for it, and you just rather have the issue, it doesn't seem to me that that's the way to go. We're supposed to be fair and reasonable with each other in some sense, and apparently, you know, they just rather have the issue than that. So I would ask the court to remand on the dog issue. I'd ask the court to set an unprecedented ruling that the field sobriety tests, as presently constituted, have to be at least justified and explained and correlated to what you're trying to prove. And that's all I'd ask. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Silverman. We'll come down and greet the council.